sign out. My name is Kate Hinnick, and I'm a faculty member in the College of Nursing. So the way that I became involved with this day and this work in general is not because I'm any expert on Mother Teresa or any of this, but I participate in a faculty development group called the Contemplative Pedagogy Fellows, and I've learned so much more about how we apply the wisdom of these wonderful people in our lives every day. So I'm learning along with the rest of you, and you know, I'm thankful for the opportunity to discuss Mother Teresa and her work together. So thanks to all of you for being here. The way that we're going to structure our breakout session this afternoon is, first I want to share with you some basic information about Mother Teresa and about her life and her work and how she became, you know, so well regarded in the world of peacemaking as well as mission work. Then what we're going to do is thinking about how we can actually apply some of her wisdom and her practices to our everyday lives, how we can apply that in our communities, whether that's in our homes, in our classrooms, in our families, or places where we work, or places of worship. How can we bring this wisdom to life so that we can actually actually use it? And then hopefully we'll have a good discussion about what you all think and how you can bring this to where you are. So let's get started. So I'd like to start by talking a little bit about the life and work of Mother Teresa. So like I said, I was very interested in her life and learning more about her, but I wasn't in any way an expert. I'm still not an expert, but at least I learned a little bit about her in terms of her work and how it makes a difference to us. So we all know Mother Teresa probably as a very well-known Catholic nun who's done a great deal of impactful missionary work, primarily in India, in Calcutta. So she was born in 1910 in what was at that time the Ottoman Empire, and the area where she lives, where she is, would now be Macedonia. Her family was from an Albanian background, so in her early life she lived in an area of the country where there was a lot of strife, a lot of difficulty, conflicts between the different ethnic groups within the Ottoman Empire. She felt called to become a sister at a young age. So at around the age of 12 is when she experienced a very strong call that she was to become a sister. So she experienced this at the age of 12. She continued to feel very strongly this way throughout her adolescence. And at the age of 18, she actually moved from her home in Macedonia at the time to Ireland to join a group of sisters, to join a convent called the Sisters of Lorado. And they were an Irish order of nuns that primarily served in India. That was what really she felt called to do. She had learned a lot about mission work in India and how sisters were making a great impact on people's lives there. So that was what her calling was. After she had been in Ireland for a very short time, she actually went to India, where she was to begin her service. So when she arrived there, she worked in Calcutta from about 1931 until 1948, where she actually taught in a high school there. It was called St. Mary's High School in Calcutta. And so she was involved with teaching, and she was also administratively involved with running the school. So she did that for a long period of time, for nearly 20 years, where she was immersed in the mission of teaching. However, when she was spending her time in Calcutta teaching at the school, she felt very pulled by what was going on outside the walls of the school. So her high school was adjoining the convent where she lived, but she saw in the streets of Calcutta, in the slums there, this unfathomable degree of poverty and people living in extremely, extremely difficult circumstances. So she became very interested in that. And then in 1946, while she was still teaching, she experienced what she called a call within a call. So I already shared with you about the call she experienced to become a nun at the age of 12. But as she was deeply immersed in that work of service, she experienced another call, that the teaching was not really what she was mainly supposed to be doing, what God wanted her to be doing. What she was called to do, she felt, was to work with the poorest of the poor in Calcutta and bring her gifts to share with them. So she felt this divine calling to care for the sick and the very poor. She was so affected by that poverty and the suffering that she saw, she sought permission from her convent to respond to this additional call that she felt, to actually leave the convent and then to go live among the poor in Calcutta. So she describes how that was, to leave the safety and the relative comfort of her convent and to really commit herself to what she felt called to do, to care for the poor. She describes in her writings what that was like, to not know initially where she was going to spend the night or what was her next day going to look like as she got herself acclimated to this new way of life that she felt so committed to doing. She worked in the slums of Calcutta, figuring out what the needs were and assisting the people. And once she realized how she could most help, she appealed to the convent and actually was able to form her own order of nuns, the Missionaries of Charity, we're going to talk about. Her main work there wound up being to create some open air schools in the slums for children who weren't able to go to the school where she originally taught. So she had open air schools. And she was very dedicated to creating centers where she could care for the blind, the disabled, and the terminally ill. She's probably most well known for her work in creating a hospice in Calcutta, which was dedicated to the care of the terminally ill. And these individuals were people who were destitute, really had no resources whatsoever. So they had been turned away from hospitals and other facilities where they might receive care and were really left to die and to suffer alone on the streets. The people she cared for were often suffering from cholera, leprosy, and tuberculosis. And she made it her mission, as well as those who worked with her, to give them a place where they could die with dignity and receive care in the final days of their lives. She had actually a specific colony. It's called a leper colony that was called Shantinagar, which translates to town of peace. So that goes with what we're looking for today. This is a picture of Mother Teresa with a child that she's caring for. The words of Jesus that are here in the gospel were especially inspiring to Mother Teresa. I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. And this is what she sought to do through her work with the poor individuals that she was working with in Calcutta. She did this and fulfilled this mission, as I said, by living among these people and understanding their difficult conditions by experiencing that firsthand. So I talked a little bit about how she provided a safe home and care for individuals who were severely ill and at the end of their lives. She did other things to help the poor as well, who were not necessarily suffering from medical conditions or dying. She was very committed to trying to lift these individuals out of the severe destitution in which they lived. So she and her sisters who worked alongside her, as well as lay volunteers, wanted to teach these individuals skills that could help them, to lift them to some degree out of the poverty that they were in. So she was always looking to help people to rise up. So this was new to me. I learned this when I was doing my research for this presentation. She actually would teach people how to do basket weaving, how to make soap, how to make candles, so that they could do something that would contribute to having a little bit of economic independence. Would they become economically secure? Of course not. But having those skills would allow them to rise up above where they were and have some promise for helping to take care of themselves. She also taught them tailoring so they could repair other people's clothes. In her extensive missionary work with people who were ill and at the end of life, she needed more help. So she had many sisters as well as volunteers who worked with her. And she also trained the people she was serving actually in the slums, the people in Calcutta, to help care for other people when they were ill or at the end of life. So she did a great deal of work that was very, very, very impactful to the community with much need that she served. So something that was interesting to me that I wasn't aware of that I found in my readings for this was Mother Teresa was a very, very spiritual person. So in much of what we learn about her, we learn about her practices related to prayer. Prayer was a very important part of her life. She felt very spiritually connected with God, particularly as a young person, and when she felt this strong call to become a nun, and then also when she experienced the call within the call, to care for the poorest of the poor. However, she confesses that later in her life, she felt some sense of spiritual disconnect, which I just wanted to share because I think sometimes we look at these amazing people like Mother Teresa and we think that they must have some magic line to God that we don't have, right? I know it looked like that, but it was for a very long period of time, actually the last 45 to 50 years of her life, she didn't feel that strong connection with God. And that caused great suffering for her. She continued to pray, she continued to do her work and carry it out with all of her energy, all of herself. But she suffered as a result of not feeling that connection. And she came to understand that as her participation in a darkness or like in Christ's passion. So that suffering is part of this work. And for her, that difficulty with feeling God's presence was how she suffered. She perceived that as part of the work. That was new to me. I wasn't aware that she had had that experience. That was discovered in letters that she had written. Okay, and so foundational to Mother Teresa's work and the work of the Missionaries of Charity, which is the order of sisters that she developed, is the recognition of Christ in the presence of every single person. So she saw Christ's face in the destitute, in the dying, in those who are lonely, in those who appear to have no resources. When she looked at those people, she saw that as the face of Christ. And this was an inspirational Bible quote to her that she kept in her mind during prayer. Whatever you did for one of these brothers of mine, you did for me. So in her work, as well as the work that the Missionaries of Charity did, they felt that by serving these individuals with so much need, they were directly having the opportunity to serve God. While she did a great deal of work, and her sisters continue to do a great deal of work in caring for those with great needs, she stressed that the Missionaries of Charity are not social workers. She called them contemplatives in action. They do a great deal of prayer and contemplation, and they're seeking to serve God through caring for other people. In every poor person and everybody who needs help, they recognize the real but mysterious presence of God. So that's the connection there. She was committed to taking care of people's bodies and souls as they were dying, and doing that as a service to God. So because of that, she took a very holistic approach to the care that she was providing to people in whatever setting she was there. One of the hallmarks of the care she provided was very personalized service and establishing a personal connection with the people that she was caring for. These were generally people who were in some way unloved or unwanted by society, and she was committed to bringing a sense of home, love, and smiles to these people. It was interesting when I was listening to our plenary speaker, Nick Soy, I don't know if everybody was there, but thinking of the small actions that we can take rather than looking at these big picture social issues that can seem so challenging, really the whole underlying premise of her work and the work of the Missionaries of Charity is one-on-one connections with other human beings. So just how am I connecting with this one other person or this one other person in a small way, which contributes to big changes. As I said, she was probably one of her most well-known missions was the hospice that she had. It was called Nirmal Karadi, this is in Bengali, so I don't speak Bengali at all, and I don't know if I said that correctly, but that's what it was called. And that translates to pure heart. That's what she wanted to name her home for the dying. It was also called Mother Teresa's Home for the Dying. She founded this home in 1952, and that was 2 years after the formation of the Missionaries of Charity. So she had formed her Order of the Missionaries of Charity, and they really got to work on this priority of developing this hospice. The purpose of her hospice was to provide a sense of home, hospitality, and spiritual care to individuals who were destitute and dying or at the very end of their life. Her goals were to provide that spiritual care, care for the body and the soul, and make a welcoming environment. It was not any kind of high-tech medical center. So they were not aiming toward providing medical care. They certainly did rudimentary medical and health care that was needed, but it was not was not designed to be a hospital. It was designed to approach care of people holistically at the end of their life. She described it as a place for weary travelers in the last stages of their journey. She wanted to bring joy and human love and support to those who have suffered greatly. So she and her sisters had a very proactive approach to finding people who might need care or might benefit from being in her home for the dying. So she and her sisters would actually go out into the streets and find people who appeared to be in very bad shape near the end of their life and needing care, and then they would invite them to come live at her home. So they would receive basic medical care and a safe and loving place to live out their final days. I found it very interesting that later on in Mother Teresa's life, when she was very busy, I'm sure, with overseeing the Missionaries of Charity, which she continued to do until a very advanced age, there were sisters and brothers and lay people all over the world, but she remained committed to actually being with the people that she wanted to serve. So continuing to directly serve the poorest of the poor in Calcutta. So in her own words, she described how whenever she was in Calcutta, even when she was overseeing all these operations, she would start the day with prayer, and then she would put on her apron and pick up a broom and do what needed to be done. So that was something that really stuck with me, is how we can just take this wisdom of doing small things, even if we're looking at, you know, overseeing this whole big operation, but still what matters most are those individual connections with people. Her work in the hospice really demonstrates her most key lesson on how to love. Her intention was never to focus on how can we address this, you know, awful poverty in Calcutta, how can we make this go away. Her intention was to focus on the needs of one human being at a time. So again, she stressed that she's not a social worker, not going to solve all these problems, but she could connect very meaningfully with one person at a time and make a big difference. Pope John Paul II went to visit her home for the dying in 1986, and this was a quote by him and his perception of Nirmal Prayag. Nirmal Prayag is a place of suffering, a house familiar with anguish and pain, a home for the destitute and dying. But at the same time, Nirmal Prayag is a place of hope, a house built on courage and faith, a home where love reigns, a home filled with love. In Nirmal Prayag, the mystery of human suffering meets the mystery of faith and love. So he was so inspired by her work with the poor in Calcutta, and really impacted by his visit to her home for the dying, as you can see in the quote here, that 2 years after his visit, this was in 1986, 2 years after that, in 1988, he actually commissioned a similar home in Rome, actually within the Vatican, and that was called the Gift of Mary, and that was a home similar, you know, with a similar design to her home in Calcutta, that was dedicated to housing the poorest of the poor from Rome within the walls of the Vatican. And he entrusted all of the work and care that was taking place in that home to the Missionaries of Charity. So Mother Teresa, you know, certainly has gone there and served, and her sisters continue to serve there, caring for the poorest of the poor in Rome. Mother Teresa has been recognized for peacemaking in India, in Europe, in the Catholic Church, and really pretty much anyone who recognizes anyone for peacemaking has recognized Mother Teresa. She's really a very inspirational figure who's widely recognized for promoting peace and serving those in need. She was twice recognized by the Indian government for her service to the people of India, and she received the Padma Shri from the Indian government in 1962, and the Bharat Ratna is the highest available civilian honor in India. She was also recognized by Pope Paul II, who awarded her the first ever Peace Prize in 1971, and she was recognized with the Nobel Peace Prize in 1979. So it was a challenge for her to balance all of this recognition for her work when she was really at her heart an extremely humble person and was just there to pick up the broom, put on the apron, and do the work that the poor needed. But she would say that any recognition of her brings recognition to the cause that was so dear to her heart. So she joyfully accepted that recognition. Mother Teresa died in 1997, and she was beatified in 2003 and canonized as a saint by Pope Francis on September 4th of 2016. So I'm not entirely familiar with the process of becoming a saint, but this was the expedited version of it. So she had made such significant contributions to caring for the most needy, and it was such an exceptional individual that it was desired to make that happen as quickly as possible. I'd like to talk a little bit about the legacy of Mother Teresa, and then we'll get into her own words, which will lead us into our contemplative activity. So her main legacy is the Missionaries of Charity, which, as I said, have spread all over the world and are dedicated to serving the poorest of the poor. They provide effective help to individuals in all of them, everywhere pretty much, in Asia, Africa, Latin America, North America, Europe, and Australia. They undertake relief work in the face of natural catastrophes like floods, epidemics, famines, as well as caring for refugees. Their mission specifically allows them to work with children, adolescents, individuals who are homeless, and those suffering from addiction, HIV, AIDS, and extreme poverty. The Missionaries of Charities are not just sisters. So there are sisters, there are brothers, and there are lay people called co-workers. So there are opportunities for people with all different life qualities to become involved. And this sister, who's pictured here, actually in one of the current facilities of the Missionaries of Charity in Calcutta, also that's a teacher, is wearing the traditional sari that is what the sisters of the Missionaries of Charity wear. So you'll see Mother Teresa pictured in that type of sari, and that's what they all wear. Okay. So what our main goal is for today is looking at how can we apply some of the principles that Mother Teresa applied in her daily work to our lives. So how can we apply this wisdom to promote peace within ourselves, in our homes, communities, and in the world? So I'd like to, before we start out on our own reflections, share with you some quotes directly from Mother Teresa so you can understand her thinking and writing a little bit better. One of the prerequisites that she found that was critical to her contemplative and prayer practice was cultivating silence. So interestingly, she distinguishes between internal and external silence, acknowledging that oftentimes it's harder for us to be silent on the inside than it is to put ourselves in a room that might be silent. So this is a quote from her writings in On Prayer. Silence of the heart is necessary so that you can hear God everywhere. In the closing of a door, in the person who needs you, in the birds that sing, in the flowers, and in the animals. And she talks about working hard to find silence in your life and in your mind. That's what we'll work on today. this is another quote that I would like you to consider as we go into our contemplative activity. This is directly from her writings on love. "It is easy to love those who live far away. It is not always easy to love those who live right next to us. It is easier to offer a dish of rice to meet the needs of the hungry than to comfort the loneliness and anguish of someone in our own home who does not feel loved. I want you to go and find the poor in your homes. Above all, your love has to start there." So we're going to use these two quotes to get us into our contemplative activity so we can apply some of Mother Teresa's wisdom right now. And then we will have opportunity for discussion. Okay, so we're going to switch gears for a moment. I'm sure everyone's ready for me to stop talking. I've been talking a lot. So I hope that you'll have what we discussed about Mother Teresa in your mind as we engage in this activity. We're going to do the contemplative activity for about 15 or 20 minutes, and then we're going to have a discussion after that. Okay? So as we prepare to do the contemplative activity together, I'm going to ask everyone to sit comfortably in your chairs. Make yourself comfortable and relax your body. You can choose to close your eyes if you'd like to. I probably would if I wasn't standing up here talking. Or you can simply relax your eyes and put your gaze downward, whatever's most comfortable to you. While we're doing this, we're going to be trying to silence our minds. So I'd like you to breathe normally and keep your body relaxed. Take a few moments to try to bring some silence into your mind. Working toward internal silence, you will probably notice thoughts coming to your mind. This is perfectly normal. Simply acknowledge those thoughts without judgment and allow them to pass. Try not to attempt to deal with the ideas you're thinking about and simply let them pass. It might help to picture these thoughts like clouds passing across the sky. Thoughts like clouds come and go. Whether there are one or two white puffy clouds or a sky full of dark storm clouds, no one of these clouds has the ability to disrupt the integrity of the clear blue sky beneath them. You can think of your mind as the clear, open, and expansive blue sky. As the clouds and thoughts come, simply acknowledge them and return to the clear blue sky of silence. You may choose to focus on your in-breaths and out-breaths, feeling the peace of your body. As thoughts arise, acknowledge them and allow them to I'd like to now invite you to think of a community that you are part of. This may be your home, one of your classes, your job, your place of worship. Think about the people who make up that community and smile at them. Picture their faces and them sitting in the room with you. Consider now someone in that community who might be having a hard time, might be struggling. Perhaps they are feeling alone or rejected or lost. Think especially about that person and smile. Something you might be able to do for this person to make their burden a bit lighter. Maybe you could smile at them and say hello the next time you see them. Maybe you can sit next to them. Maybe you can stay a few minutes after class to talk to them. What is one kind, small gesture you can do for this person? How might a small gesture from you make their day a little bit easier, make their burden a little bit lighter. Might this affect other things in their life? When you're ready, I invite you to open your eyes and close them. Centrate yourself in your seat, get yourself comfortable, and return to the group. I would welcome any reflections, any thoughts, anything on the exercise that we just did, or about what we talked about in the lectures. Would anyone like to share any reflections on that activity?
I'd like to say, I think that it's good to kind of take a step back in the world and kind of think about, like you said, you kind of give us a scenario to think about it, and, you know, think about someone or some people that need help and stuff like that. I think that was pretty good to kind of experience.
Okay, great. Thanks. I'm glad that worked for you. So I think that's something that's central with Mother Teresa's practice herself, as well as with her teachings, that, you know, kind of avoiding like nebulous, like, yeah, let's make the world a better place, let's make the world better. Like, how about we think about one person and what a little thing we can do for them to help? Any other thoughts?
I just think that sort of thinking about that, about just sort of finding one person to talk to, is just really, really important for that person. You know, like,
yeah,
you don't even know for sure.
Right.
And, you know, we have to do that more often because, you know, people might be struggling. So,
yeah,
just to have to hear people express, you know, an interest or, you know, a comment or support, you know.
I think so too. And I think something that really strikes me about Mother Teresa's teaching is this is nothing major we need to do. We don't need to go open a hospice for the destitute in Calcutta to make a difference. We can smile at somebody and maybe make a difference to them. Maybe that'll make their day a little bit better, and that might affect how they interact with another person.